back a couple of albums. Good Old War from Comeback as Rain with Better Weather on 90.3 KNBA. We heard from a big star, classic Alex Chilton and company from number one record album in 13. New music from Parsons Field in there. Old Man the Way covering Peter Rowan's Panama Red. Be Good Tanya's covering Peter Rowan's Midnight Moonlight. And we started out with brand new music from the Wood Brothers. It is 8:28. It is the Morning Line program for Friday here on 90.3 KMBA. I'm Danny Preston.
And I'm Frank Chythlock.
Hey, Frank, good morning. You know, recently, they're to the Yukon. Who do I mean by they?
The Iditarod
Mushers. I'm glad you asked. That's exactly what I meant. Race leaders are in Anvik. It's the first checkpoint on the Yukon. Girdwood fave Nicholas Pettit's in the lead. The church bell signals the arrival of the first musher to a very picturesque village. And munchies await. A couple of stores to shop around in. The checkpoint is in the lodge there at Anvik. There's not a whole lot of accommodations, but the kicker, the lakefront anchorage serves a five-course dinner to the first musher arriving at this checkpoint, as well as a cash award. What do you think? Tofu?
A big old plate of green stuff, right?
Green stuff,
that cash award.
Yes, yes, indeed. Some lettuce. Nicholas Pettit, of course, into Anvik this morning at 5:21. Mitch Seavey is into Shagaluk, as is Yoar Olsom. And rounding out the top five, Pete Kaiser out of Iditarod and Richie Deal out of Iditarod. So we'll be keeping an eye on them as the last great race gets set to enter into week number two. And just a real quick time for a reminder that it is a spring forward time Sunday morning. Don't forget to go to bed at normal time Saturday night, then get up at 2 o'clock, set your clocks forward an hour, and then go back to bed and then wake up all confused. Speaking of confused, I will stop talking now, Frank, because you have a very special guest.
Right. So we're talking about Shagaluk, and boy, you know, there's a certain language spoken there, and I'm trying to picture that. Well, anyhow, I've got a research analyst from the State of Alaska, Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council, Roy Mitchell. How's it going? Welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Frank. Thank you.
So I'm trying to picture Shagaluk and figure, well, is that in the Dagestan area, or is that Holokochak?
It's in the Dekanog or Dagestan region. Literally, Dagestan is the name of the people, and Dekanog the name of the language.
Oh, cool. Important distinction. Yeah. So we're talking about languages as well as a special bill that's been kind of in the works this last week, or rather in hearings and stuff, and we've kind of talked about that earlier this week. But what's new?
Yeah, well, a lot of things are new, Frank. It's pretty exciting. But 10 weeks ago, the Alaska Native Language Preservation Advisory Council came out with its 2018 report to the governor and legislature with several specific recommendations on what the state of Alaska could do to encourage the survival of Alaska Native languages rather than to discourage Alaska Native languages. And one of the things that the council has called on is for Governor Walker to recognize that there is a linguistic emergency right now. Of the Alaska Native languages that have co-official status, one, Eyak, lost its last fluent speaker in 2008. There are a handful of other Alaska Native languages which have between one and five elderly speakers left. And even the languages that we've thought were, oh, well, they're in good shape, Central Yupik and St. Lawrence Island Yupik, even those now, the numbers of speakers are continuing to drop. So based upon some initial math that Professor Michael Krause did back in the 70s, sad to say, his rather pessimistic estimates were overly optimistic. And it looks, if present trends continue, that is, if we don't make changes, every one of Alaska's native languages could be down to zero speakers by the end of the century. And action needs to be taken now. Not 50 years from now, which is why it's a linguistic emergency. And exciting for the council is that Representative Ortiz of Ketchikan and others have picked up on this idea, and there is a House Continuing Resolution number 19 that was considered this week in the House's Committee on Community and Regional Affairs, And they passed it yesterday, and so it's going to be in front of the whole House soon. It's HCR 19, which urges Governor Bill Walker to issue an administrative order recognizing that a linguistic emergency exists for Alaska Native languages. And for those of us that are students of Alaska Native languages, supporters of Alaska Native languages, speakers of Alaska Native languages, this is exciting news. We're getting a little bit of traction. There's a lot more needed, but it's small reason for some optimism.
And I listened into some of the testimony, and you could really hear people are passionate about this, as well as there was a certain amount of, well, let's just say that some of our House representatives folks, they're very educated in certain ways, and languages may not be one of those. So I was kind of, it was interesting to see this sort of turn where people were like, well, what do you want, to replace English? Is that what you want? You know, there's this sort of pointed to an actual kind of glimmer of like, oh, is that what you mean? So I think
That's an important thing that bears discussion. And I've heard that kind of argument for years. I was living in Bethel and was one of the parent agitators who kept pestering Lower Kuskokwim School District School Board for years to let us have a Yupik immersion school in Bethel. And the argument against it coming from over half of the school board members is, well, if you teach kids Yupik, they won't learn English. And
right.
It's like, well, it's about impossible to fail to learn English in the United States in the late 20th century. And none of the actions of the council, none of the actions in this proposed legislation, nothing that the council's asked the governor to consider for administrative order, none of these are asking to have Alaska Native languages replace English or have a higher status than English. The point that a number of people may miss is right now the English language has 99.9999% of the support of the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska, in every single bill it passes, promotes English language. The bills are written in English. School district policies require English be studied every year. English is required for graduation by the state from every school in the state of Alaska. And Alaska Native languages generally aren't even mentioned. They're invisible. So that's what I and my work supporting the council and the council in their work are trying to do is make it a normal thing again, as it was 100 years ago, for people to hear Alaska Native languages spoken. Make it something that Alaska Native language speakers feel comfortable doing, because it's sadly still the case that Alaska Native language speakers often feel like, oh, I shouldn't speak my language here because there's English people listening to me. And that's so, so, so sad, because people's languages are part of their heart and soul. It's part of people's personal identity. It's part of people's group identity. And people's languages contain and reproduce so many key features of culture that you really can't, features you can't really get just in English translation. They don't come through. So there's a fantastic amount of knowledge, feeling, identity, power, history, literally, in Alaska Native languages. And that is at risk right now.
Totally worth preserving. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're languages that can be available to anyone in Alaska. The people that are working to promote Alaska Native language survival are very happy to have anyone who wants to learn. It's not a racial thing. This is something that's important for people of Alaska, both the people that have been here for thousands and thousands of years, as well as for the people that have only been here for a couple centuries, or one century, or 42 years in my case, or that arrived last month, but are realizing, oh my goodness, I live in Alaska. What do I need to know and experience to really understand Alaska as Alaskans experience it? One of the things I've loved about going to Hawaii, which I've only been there once, is you know that you are in a special place. And I had no idea before I went there. You couldn't even take a cab if you couldn't speak a little Hawaiian, because you need to say it for the street names. The presence of the language is right there, and that's something people are happy with, something people are proud of. The Hawaiian native people are proud of. The Haole population and other populations that have lived there for generations make use of Hawaiian language too, even if they're not fluent. And it's something that the tourists love. So if people challenge the idea of, well, is there really a place for Alaska Native languages in the 21st century? I say absolutely. It's something everybody can participate in. Everybody can get something of value from. And it's an aesthetic value. It's a personal value. And for those who like to count dollars, it's going to be it's a tourist plus value. It's value-added packaging. It's win-win-win. There's no disadvantages to encouraging the survival of Alaska Native languages.
And I think I'd read that culture trumps stereotype every time. I think that was a quote that I'd read recently, and I was like, you know, that's true. And in this case, you know, you see that people say, I guess one of the things I've heard that people are like, oh, well, learning language is hard. Can you just put something on there that means something in some native language? And it's like, yeah, why don't we get specific to the location where you're at and look at, oh, well, here we are in Anchorage in the Dena'ina land and figure something out with the local people, right? Yeah.
Well, those are some of the things that the council has recommended, and some of those specific recommendations are things that we're hoping might materialize in a potential administrative order from the Walker and Malott administration. Traditional Alaska Native place names. Really, really important. We actually use some of them. A lot of the village names, the mountain we call Denali, are
and the dog rays.
And yes, can't give you the etymology of that one off the top of my head. But Anchorage has started using Chanchnu again. What English speakers? I won't even say they had a hard time saying Chanchnu 103 years ago. Yes, 103 years ago. I think they're just being lazy, and they call it Chester.
Right.
Chester Creek.
There's no Chester
in that story. It's people going, Chanchnu, that's awfully hard. I'm going to call it Chester. It's not hard. And it's got meaning. It's Grassy Creek. And I guess 100, 200, 300, 400 years ago, it was noteworthy that this was a particularly overgrown with grass type of creek. Anyway, so we're making some progress on that. And as I said earlier, those are things that anybody in Alaska can enjoy learning, can enjoy using, because it has deep historical meaning. It adds meaning to people's daily experience to understand, oh, it's a name that's hundreds of years old for this place where I live, or this place where I work, or this place where I'm visiting. As opposed to a lot of the English names are commemorative names of non-Alaskans who some explorer walking through wanted to suck up to somebody back at the British Admiralty, so I'm going to name this after somebody. And it has no connection, had no connection ever with anything in Alaska other than one explorer coming through wanted to earn points, just like, can't remember the guy's name, the one who wanted to earn points with the Ohio presidential candidate in 1896, this guy named McKinley.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with Alaska. Never did have anything to do with Alaska. So it's, in a sense, bringing Alaska back home.
Makes sense to me. Yeah, so this, where does this go next? It's, you said it's in front of the whole House. What's kind of the timeline on this bill?
Yeah, it passed through the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee this week. They had 2.25 hours testimony on Tuesday morning, and a total of about the same amount of time testimony and then discussion of amendments and so on yesterday morning. And it's now been moved on to the House, and I don't believe they've issued a date for when it will come up for consideration in front of the House. But if any of your listeners are interested in submitting written testimony, they can do so by sending an email. And you know, you could compose something as a Word doc, or you could just simply write it in your email. And it's regarding HCR 19. And you send it to house.rules@akleg.gov. And they will see that testimony is included electronically with the other testimony, with the wording on the bill, with the recordings on the testimony. So that's house.rules@akledge.gov.
Well, thanks a lot, and we'll look forward to kind of hearing more about this in the future. Our guest today, Roy Mitchell, is research analyst with the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council.
Thank you, Frank.
Okay, thanks so much. I think it's fascinating, too, that the sort of shift in the cultural zeitgeist we're seeing here with initiatives like you're talking about, Roy, and with, I mean, for example, we had folks from UAA come in earlier this week and talk about beginning this fall, there's now going to be a general education requirement for Alaska Native Studies. So there's been this sort of shift from preserving or saving Native culture to going beyond that and fostering
let's
it.
Let's foster it, let's share it, let's experience it, let's live it. These aren't languages and cultures that are meant to sit on a shelf or sit in boxes. They're meant to be lived and experienced. And obviously,
open the boxes.
And obviously, Alaska Native people have a particular interest and a particular right, a moral right to their own history, language, and culture. But these languages are out there, and they're available for anyone that wants to deepen and enrich their experience as an Alaskan. And I've been a student of Alaska Native languages. I started studying Inupiaq at Fairbanks. It'll be 42 years this fall. I was a student of Dr. Ed McLean's from Barrow. And it's added to my life experience. It really has. I think about the world differently. There's things I think about that I would never have occurred to me if I had not moved beyond just English and German and a wee bit of Spanish and Russian. Because those are all related languages. Alaska Native languages have profoundly different concepts that are required by the grammar of the language. Things you have to think about that English grammar doesn't require you to think about. So
I love that you use the word worldview in there too. Mm. The symbolic interactions are quick to point out that language is the main tool in communication that we use as a society to help establish worldview. So
absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us on
Morning
Line with great information, Roy. Thank you very much, Mr. Chaitlik. 8:45, Bamiwa and Foo Fighters to come.
There are four Native women running for Congress. They're trying to increase the odds for the very first Native American woman elected to Congress. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk with them and other Native women running for office about the issues and values driving their quest. We hope you'll join us.